April the 1st was a day generally enjoyed to the full by William. But this year something seemed to have gone wrong. Not one of his efforts had been successful. His elder sister, Ethel, had calmly put on one side, without even attempting to crack it, the empty eggshell that he had carefully arranged in her egg cup. His elder brother, Robert, had removed the upturned tin tack from his chair before sitting down, and had placed it so neatly upon William's that William had been taken unawares. His father had refused even to raise his eyes from his newspaper when William shouted, "Look, Father, there's a cow in the garden!" And his mother had merely murmured, "Yes, dear," when William had informed her that Ethel had been bitten by a mad dog on her way to the village. His attempts to make April fools of his outlaws had been no more successful. They were all indeed so much upon their guard that none of them would answer the simplest question or pay heed to the most innocent remark. At last they abandoned hostilities and formed an offensive alliance against the other boys of the neighbourhood. But not even this was successful. The other boys of the neighbourhood also were too well up in the rules of the game to be taken in by the well-worn tricks the outlaws played on them. Advised of the near approach of bulls, runaway horses, motor cars out of control, they merely made long noses at the outlaws. Informed that sweets were being given away at Mr. Moss's sweet shop, that a circus had just arrived at the other end of the village, that Farmer Jenks was riding round his farmyard on his old sow, they merely remarked, "Yah, April Fools yourselves." "I wish we could find someone that had forgotten it was April Fool's Day," said Henry.
"Tell you what I'd like to do," said William. "I'd like to make someone really important an April Fool, like the King or Parliament an April Fool."
"You couldn't."
"Yes, I could. I could easily. I could ring 'em up and say that an enemy had landed, and then they'd call out the army and march down to the coast and find no one there. I bet they'd be April Fools, all right."
"You don't know their telephone number," said Ginger.
"No, but I could look 'em up in the book, couldn't I?"
"You'd probably get executed," said Douglas.
"Yes, I know. That's why I'm not going to do it. Not to the King and Parliament, anyway.
But I'd like to make someone important an April Fool, but not as important as the King and Parliament. Let's think who's the most important person living here."
"The Vicar?" suggested Ginger.
"The Doctor?" suggested Douglas. "Yes, I think the Doctor," said William. "He'd be easier to make one, anyway."
"I know. I've thought of something to bring 'em both in."
Followed by his outlaws, William made his way up to the doctor's front door, knocked at it smartly, and informed the maid who opened it that the vicar was dying and would the doctor please go to him at once. For answer, he received a box on the ear that nearly made him lose his balance. He rejoined his friends, rubbing his boxed ear tenderly and filled with righteous indignation.
"Huh! Suppose it was true, and they'd let the poor vicar die. Well, I think she's the same as a murderer, that woman is. I've a good mind to go and tell the vicar that she's as good as murdered him. I bet I was as near dead as you could be, too, with a bang like that on the side of my head. She ought to get put in prison for murdering both of us. I'm jolly well sick of April Fool's Day, anyway. I vote we go and play somewhere."
It was decided that it would hardly be safe to play in their own village. Their own village was too full of their enemies, eager to use the noble festival of All Fool's Day as an opportunity of getting even with them. They could not safely relax their guard for a moment in their own village.
"Let's go over to Marley," suggested Ginger, "and take the football with us."
Marley was a village about 2 miles away. The outlaws were comparatively unknown at Marley.
"Good," agreed William. "We'll get a bit of peace there."
They set off briskly across the fields to Marley, and there found a vacant plot of land on which to hold a football match.
"A beastly house next to it, of course," said William morosely, "and they'll be sure to make a beastly fuss every time the ball goes into the garden. I don't think there's a single place left to play in England that hasn't got a house next to it, all ready to make a fuss the minute your ball goes into its garden. Sometimes I feel I don't care how soon the end of the world comes."
"Well, come on, let's begin to play," said Ginger.
They began to play, and in a few minutes, as William had prophesied, their ball went over the wall into the garden of the house. It was a high brick wall with no convenient foothold on it, so they went to the gate to survey the enemy's ground. There they found that to get round to the side garden where their ball was, they'd have to pass a window where a haughty-looking lady sat at a writing table.
Clearly, it could not be done.
"We'll have to go to the door and ask," said William cheerfully. William's spirits always rose at a crisis. "I'll put on my plight look." William's plight look, though much admired by himself and his friends, was, in reality, a sickly leer. It certainly did not seem to ingratiate him with the housemaid who opened the door.
"Please, can we go round to your garden to get our ball, if you don't mind? Thank you very much."
The housemaid stared at him disapprovingly, disappeared, and soon returned to say shortly,
"She says it's an intolerable nuisance, but you can this once." "Thank you very much," said William, widening his leer and making her a courtly bow. "None of your impudence," she said, and slammed the door in his face.
The outlaws went round to the side of the house and found the ball. They returned to the plot of wasteland and continued their interrupted match. In 5 minutes the ball had gone over the wall again. They considered the situation with some dismay.
"I'm not going to ask again," said William firmly. "She'll start murdering me, same as the other one did if I go. You'd better go, Ginger."
"All right," said Ginger, and began to compose his features into an imitation of William's leer as he walked up to the front door. The same housemaid opened it, received Ginger's dulcet request with obvious indignation, then retired to report it to her mistress. She returned almost immediately.
"She says you ought to be ashamed of yourselves pestering like this. She says you can get it this once, but she says she'll send for the police if it goes on."
Ginger retrieved the ball and rejoined his friends.
"Gosh," he said, "more like dragons than human beings round here, aren't they? We'll take jolly good care not to let it go over again, anyway."
They returned to their game, but 5 minutes later, an energetic and unguarded kick from Douglas sent the ball once more into the forbidden garden.
"Well, it's you or Henry to get it now," said William. "Me and Ginger's had our turns." "They all look pretty savage about here," said Douglas. "They look as if they'd kill you as soon as look at you. I votes we go home and leave it."
"Oh, yes, I dare say you do," said William. "It's not your football. It's my football, and I'm not going home without it, so there."
"What are you going to do, then?"
"I'm going to get it. I'm going to crawl round to the garden on my hands and knees so she can't see me from the window, and get it."
"I'll come with you," said Ginger.
"So will I," said Douglas and Henry.
There was no need for more than one to go to fetch the ball, but when there was any danger, the outlaws liked to face it together. In single file, on hands and knees, they made their way to the garden and retrieved the ball. In single file, on hands and knees, they began their journey back. But as they were passing beneath the window, Ginger sneezed, and the amazed and indignant face of the lady of the house appeared in the window, disappeared, then reappeared, now more indignant than amazed, at the door.
The outlaws rose sheepishly to their feet.
The lady stood barring their path and giving eloquent voice to her indignation.
"Disgraceful! Disgraceful! Disgraceful! I've a good mind to send for the police and give you in charge for trespassing. If I ever see any of you inside this garden again, I'll send for the police at once. Go away this minute. If I knew who your parents were, I'd write to them most strongly."
The outlaws fled, William clutching his beloved football.
"Well, it's time to go home anyway," he said.
"Yes, it's nearly 12.
Said Ginger, pretending to consult his watch, which never went for more than 5 minutes, but in reality glancing at the church clock that showed above the trees.
"Nearly 12, said William wistfully, "and we've not made anyone an April Fool. It'll be the first year I ever remember that we've not made anyone an April Fool."
"We've not been made one ourselves, anyway," Ginger reminded him.
"Course not," said William scornfully. "Catch anyone making April Fools of us."
"That's not the point. The point is that we've not made anyone one. It seems awful somehow not to have made anyone an April Fool on April Fool's Day."
"Well, it's not quite 12 yet," said Ginger. "It's not too late."
"Yes, but who is there to make one here?" said William.
At that moment, a boy was seen coming towards them. He was fat and pale, and he looked both stupid and conceited. The outlaws took an immediate dislike to him.
"Let's make him one," whispered William.
"Yes, but how?" said Ginger.
"I know," said William.
The boy had come abreast of them now. He gave them a challenging grimace.
"I say,
said William with well-assumed friendliness. "What do you like best? What sort of cakes, I mean?"
"Coconut buns," answered the boy promptly.
William gave a short, surprised laugh. "Well, that's a funny thing." He pointed to the house that had been the scene of their escapade. "You see that house?"
"Yes," said the boy.
"Well, the lady that lives there, she always gives coconut buns to any boys who come to ask if they can get their ball from her garden. If you want some coconut buns, all you have to do is go up to the door and knock and ask if you can speak to the mistress of the house. And when you get to her, all you've got to say is that you're one of the boys who've been playing ball just outside her garden this morning, and the ball's gone over again, and may you fetch it. And when you've said that, she'll give you some coconut buns."
The boy stared at them.
"Go on," William urged him, glancing at the clock and seeing the fingers perilously near the fatal hour. "Go on. We want you to have those buns, because you look hungry. See here." Desperately, he took a treasured whistle from his pocket. "See here. I'll give you that if you'll go and say it." The boy took and pocketed it without a word. William's urgency communicated itself to the others. They felt that their very honour depended upon, somehow or other, making this boy an April Fool before 12 o'clock. And look here," said Ginger feverishly. "I'll give you this penknife too, if you'll go quick. We want you to have those coconut buns."
The boy pocketed the penknife too, stared at them for another moment, then said, "All right," and walking up to the front door, rang the bell. The housemaid opened it, and he was admitted. The door closed. The outlaws danced a silent dance of triumph and delight at the gate. Then they waited impatiently for the fleeing form of their victim to issue, pursued by the wrath of the redoubtable lady of the house. Nothing happened.
"Perhaps she's rung up the police," said William, looking anxiously down the road.
"Well, if she has, we've made April fools of them," said Ginger triumphantly.
I hope she's not murdering him," said Douglas. "We should get into a beastly row if we've got him murdered."
But at that moment, an upstairs window was flung open and the boy appeared at it. He held a coconut bun in one hand, the whistle and the penknife in the other. He grinned and munched and waved his spoils at them exultantly.
What are you doing there?" stammered William.
"I live here," shouted the boy. "It's my home. Yaboo! April Fools!"
He laid down the coconut bun and took up a pea shooter. The clock from the church tower struck 12.
"April Fools!" called the boy again.
The outlaws turned and began to walk slowly down the road. A pea caught William neatly, just above one ear.